Armed Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Hello everyone, I'm Anne-Marie Currie and I'm your presenter for Senior Focus today. And I'm just by myself today. I haven't got a guest in the studio, but I've got a head full of ideas and things that have been stimulating me over the last week. And several announcements have come through, and I think these are things I want to share with you. One of the first things is that climate change is receiving a great deal of media attention, and of course there's a strategy out for consultation by Auckland Council, which by the time you hear this program will have closed. But I know a number of people don't get around to doing these sort of things, but they do hear announcements on the news and so on, and so it's something that's on people's lips. Now, Peter Haynes, the chair of Albert Eden Local Board, has put out a statement today on his Facebook page, and he's shown a photo of a bus, and he's talked about the importance of public transport, but he's also mentioned climate change. And in the climate change mention, he's said quite clearly we're not well enough prepared for the kinds of storms that are going to be part of everyday life. So we might be talking about things to mediate climate change, but at the moment we're not doing enough in the area of how we're actually going to cope with the consequences. Another set of consequences, of course, is the Pacific Islands that are going to be submerged, and concerns of that nature were raised at a climate change hui that I was at locally in Roskill last weekend back. And the key people there representing the Pacific and the Pacific nations were very, very concerned, obviously, and wanting New Zealand to be very much more proactive about climate change. But going back to Peter Haynes's comment, his comment was about needing to be better prepared in terms of these storms and wanting this preparation to be part of the focus of the work that council does. And I know that the seniors panel has been concerned, and they have looked into this because the danger is very prevalent with elderly people or older folk needing, particularly those who are not very steady on their feet, need help to get out. They need help in the form of stretchers. They need help in the form of maybe two other people to get one of them out. And they may need evacuation to a higher territory. They may need warm gear, they may need extra food, all sorts of things come into this, and you can't just do it in an ad hoc, haphazard way. It needs to be prepared properly. There needs to be a plan in place. We need to know where the vulnerable people are. Now, back in the day when Heather Tange was the mayor of Palmerston North City, she actually instigated a program where they could actually identify where these vulnerable older folk were and proper plan on how they were to be assisted or moved depending on the type of emergency that occurred. But it was something the council could respond. They could actually, they had the tools, and the work was done to prepare this database so they could actually get into action. Now, we do not have that in Auckland. And at a board level, it's most appropriate for board members to be concerned about this and to be speaking out about this. And so I really value the leadership of Peter Haynes in this case, because he's drawing attention to something that will need real work done in the next term of council. And I'm hoping that the seniors panel will actually put it as a top priority on their agenda. I know they've had transport and housing as key initiatives that they want to see improved for older folk, and quite rightly so, and they're concerned about issues about communications with the digital divide, but perhaps part of that comes into the climate change situation. If you're relying on social media to reach people, then they're not necessarily going to know anything about what your plans are for an emergency. Now, as we're talking, I am reflecting back on the things that I was involved with in social media over the last 2 days, and an announcement has come from government that there will be $2.5 million set aside under the National Science Challenge Fund for Kaumatua, in particular Kaumatua housing. And this is a very exciting development because there's been a lot of work done by the National Science Challenge about housing. There's been a lot of investigation and research done, and Dr. Kay Saville-Smith's work is highly renowned internationally. We also have a member of Grey Power who's done a PhD on housing, social housing in particular, women and over 50, and she's got something to add as well, and so I'm very keen to have her come in when she has time and be interviewed around this area. I think there's much more attention being placed on looking at what do we need in the future, because what we did in the past is not going to inform us at all about what we shouldn't have in the future, partly because the population is changing so much. We have got going to have 25% of older people, these would be people over 65, in our population by 2035. So when a quarter of your population is on national super, then you really have to ask some questions. How are they going to survive if upwards of 50% and more are going to be renting? And those are the figures that we're receiving in some of the sort of research that's being done at the moment. So going back, this Professor Brendan Hokafitu, who's behind this announcement about the 2.5 million coming to Kaumātua, he made the point that Kaumātua in the Māori world are extremely active and busy, and that often people have the notion that, oh, retired people are just sitting around watching television, staring at the walls. And he made the point that Kaumātua are often busier than people in jobs because they're actually doing, you know, 50 hours a week. They're volunteering, but they're public speaking. They're asked to call on major leadership roles within Māoridom, and that involves their travel as well as their time in so many different directions. I know of a woman who worked in Māori Affairs and then Te Puni Kōkiri for many years, and even now she's doing work for her iwi up the East Coast, but she belongs to a group that I'm involved with, and I know it's very difficult for her to get to that group because she's so often got so many other demands on her time, and I thought I was busy. So even though she is on a pension, she's certainly not at home watching television doing nothing. But coming back to the housing challenges, I'm delighted to talk to you about one of the projects that the National Science Challenge got behind. And now we have Kāinga Ora, not Housing New Zealand. Kāinga Ora has a priority to help fund older people's housing, and in particular housing for Kaumātua. And a village was planned in Hamilton. And it was a very interesting story because the Ruawawa Trust, the Kaumātua Charitable Trust, was wanting to set up a managed care facility, and they wanted to propose Kaumātua housing as part of that managed care facility. And they also were working with the Runanga of Kirikiri Roa, and so there was two entities working together. And what was really fascinating was how the project evolved. The processes they went through, of course they had to go through normal channels to get resource consent once they got hold of the land, but even getting the land was interesting because they were able to have priority in the case of what happened with the bowling club land, because they were doing something for older people, because it was not for profit. People were very ready to come to the table and negotiate a favourable price. So they got two blocks of land that were actually in the same street, Moa Crescent, and these two blocks were across the road from each other, one much larger than the other. But that enabled them to plan something much bigger than what they originally set out to do. They also found that the sorts of people that got involved in the process, in the project itself, the carpenters and so on, a lot of the people that worked on the project were really highly motivated about it because it was for seniors and because, again, it was not for profit. And so that was how they managed to trim some pricing. That was how they managed to get more materials donated, more sponsorship. And they were able to come in on budget. They were able to, in a time frame, work things out in quite a timely manner. And there was Māori protocol followed all the way through. And that seemed to enhance not only the commitment of people to the project, but it gave a kind of spiritual energy to the project, which enabled it to be running much more smoothly than your average build and construction work. I'm yet to visit the village and check out for myself the provisions and so on, but I understand that people are very happy in the village, that people have some autonomy, but they also have the capacity to share and relate to one another. It's interesting, it's a mixed race village. It's not, you don't have to be Māori to be in the village, and in fact I think Māori are about a third of the people living in the village currently. But this is a situation where it took leadership, it took belief, it took commitment, and it took a variety of people working largely with the older people of this trust whose members would benefit from coming into the village. And so it was really by the people, for the people, with the people, and these people were kaumātua. And I think that it's a very interesting thing that often people have a stereotype. They think older people can't do this, that, these or those, or they don't think about consulting them because, oh, they're too old, we won't bother with them, take us all day. They've got all these kinds of stereotypes which actually prevent them from being inclusive about seniors and their needs and bringing them along on the journey. And so this was a project which illustrates what a fantastic result you can get when you do bring them along, when you do incorporate their ideas, and when you do have them as an integral part of the whole project and process from woe to go, not a tack on at the end. So I'm very excited to hear about this $2.5 million set aside for kaumātua housing, and I wonder, in fact, where that's going to be spent and what the priorities are and so on. So I'll be looking out for information on that because I think that's something that will be of benefit for people to know about. And when we actually focus on housing, people sometimes think of the concept, oh, we should be helping people into their own house. And the more I talk to older people, whether they're 50 plus, 60 plus, 70 plus, whatever, the more they talk about the benefits of living close to people they know, having space that they can call their own, but having a sense of shared community with others, that's important to them. And for many, they just want to stay where they are, where they've been most of their life. They don't want to move anywhere else. But some of them find that as they get older, it's too far to get help. Their friends maybe live in another suburb, maybe 2 or 3 k's away. If the friends lose the driving license because the doctor says you can't drive anymore, they are then no longer part of that support network of that person. And so they become more vulnerable because they rely on paid help, people they don't actually know, as opposed to friends for the things that they need. And so living in a community where you've got a commitment to that community gives you a whole set of resources of support. And so that's why it's been a mission of mine to make sure that Liston Village, that's the senior village up in the Monte Cecilia Park, Hillsborough Road, is a village that's retained rather than demolished as the current agreement on the council books says it's going to be. And so just a little bit of background about Liston. The vision of those who wanted the village demolished as I understand it, historically, because I wasn't in the area at the time when this was all mapped out, but there was a school, and some of you may recall, there was a school that you would see over the fence as you walked into the main entrance of the Parr homestead. And the idea was to remove the school and remove the village, and then you would have a sort of a large park surrounding what is a premier building, a heritage building of probably the one of the highest values of any building of its type in New Zealand. I mean, there's only about three or four buildings like this in the whole country. And so it's an icon, and certainly it deserves to have a park around it that's of a high standard and well maintained. And if you look into the front of the building, or from that front veranda, if you go up there for coffee, you have a magnificent view. And the building itself has been made accessible on the ground floor. There is a wheelchair access from the side. And sitting up there on the veranda, looking out over One Tree Hill, you can just imagine what a fantastic environment this was in the past. And it was used after its owner fell into financial difficulties and it was sold. It passed through a few hands, and it was used as a school. It was both a Catholic school and an Anglican school. And there was a working farm around it, that to more on the south western side, where the Liston village is now. No wonder they have such good growing soils there. But the specimen trees on the property, the Moreton Bay figs and some of the other trees up the driveway on the eastern side, those are magnificent. They're over 150 years old. And so therefore, that part of the park is also a jewel in the Crown, Auckland. Now, this proposal to demolish both the school and the village was something that was brought about through the council imposing the Public Works Act on the land and saying, well, that was wanted under the Public Works Act. They wanted to turn it into a park. And, of course, the then Public Works Act permitted that. And the Catholic Church then negotiated to give up its rights to the school and its rights to the village. And the final proposal was that people living in the village could stay there until they died, and until the last person died. And the more I've thought about that, the more odd I've thought that is, because who would want to live in a village surrounded by a whole lot of empty houses? And worse still, who would want to live in a village while the rest of the village was demolished around them? There's something really odd about this, because obviously the Catholic Church didn't want to be seen to be putting residents out of the places. But there's something that denies the sense of community, that denies the value of community. And it's also very odd because people don't know how long other people are going to live. I mean, it means people are surrounded in limbo with a situation where they have the support of a community, but they don't really know the life tenure of that community. They don't really know what they can rely on. Certainty is something that you want more and more as you get older, because you don't want to be facing an upheaval. I've in recent weeks heard people who still want to see a park there say things like, well, we don't want social housing there. They can go somewhere else. There's tons of places for social housing. But if those people were to be moved out now, or indeed in any time in the next 10 years, they couldn't be moved together, because there is no facility ready and waiting that could take you know, the number of people that are currently living in the village, which is in something in the mid-20s. So that sort of number of one-bedroom dwellings. It's just not around. And certainly they're not all accessible either, and they're not of the standard that they're currently in. So in a housing crisis, it doesn't make any sense to be talking about demolishing some of the highest quality housing there is in the whole country. I've been in a number of these units, and they are spacious, and they have a lot of Remu timber in them. They're extremely well built, they're Lockwoods, and they will last through storms and whatnot. They're not going to fall down easily. In fact, I dare say they're of better standard than a lot of modern building that's going on right now. So then I looked into the actual costs involved in all of this, and so far, looking at the cost of demolishing 12 houses, five across the driveway into the Power Homestead on the opposite side from the village, and then another seven down the drive in Cormer Road off Par Road. Those houses, together with the school, together with any landscaping that was involved afterwards, and lawyers in terms of drafting the agreements and so on, there's upwards of $50 million being spent so far. And I did think, even on Auckland prices, one could actually secure some land adjacent to other parks and add quite a lot of open space in Auckland for $50 million. That's a lot of money. Of course, it's been over a period of time, and it looks small in the scheme of things next to something like the CRL, the rail loop downtown. But the fact is, that is a sizeable investment. And considering it's taken housing away in a housing crisis, that's an even more serious issue in itself. There were many families living quite happily in these houses, and they were filled with all sorts of valuable things, new things. Some of them had new appliances put in the last year. These were all just demolished. In fact, I watched while a crusher crushed a stove. I stood on the driveway looking in disbelief, thinking, why aren't these things being recycled? Why aren't they sent to a second-hand dealer or to the tip, to the trading post on the way to the tip? Why aren't they actually encouraging this kind of recycling and walking the talk instead of saying we all should be doing it, but no, the council doesn't need to do it? So I was quite horrified, actually, at the whole process. And I know Duncan Garner did a great job on Television 3, and he got film cameras down there to film all this. So some people will be very familiar with what has happened. But that was 3 years ago. What are we faced with now? Grass. Yes, it's been put into grass, but I never actually see anybody walk on that grass. I never actually see any activity there. Any activities that are held in the park are held right inside the park itself towards the homestead. They're not held in that section adjacent to the driveway. So therefore, one wonders if the cottages are demolished at the village, will we just have an extra piece of grass that nobody uses as a result after we've, had to force the demolition of these buildings? The other question, of course, is some people say, well, why can't they just be taken away? But Lockwoods can't be just taken away. They can't be put on another site. They have to be completely unbolted. It's just too expensive. So they will have to be demolished. So this has been a question that's been on the minds of local board members, because the staff were working on, staff at Auckland Council were working on proposals as to what should happen, how it should develop, and what the future of the park should be. Now, we caught at a very awkward time. We've got the age-friendly city we've signed up to, which places a premium on senior housing and social housing for seniors as a necessity, and it's critical at this time. How does the city look when it's being inspected by an independent body like coming from the UN on this issue. We also have changing focuses on the way we are dealing with the needs of a growing population with regards to open space. I mean, some people say, well, we've got to have a more active community. People need to be out in these parks and we need to do activations and so on. So there's many pulls, but they don't necessarily have to be in completely opposite directions. But just looking at the park itself, it's had a considerable amount expanded to its size over the last 5 years. And to take a small slice off the village now, take the front row of cottages away and widen the entrance away, which is what the staff are recommending, would add a tiny bit more, and that would be a win-win in terms of retaining most of the village and also retaining the rest of the park, and in fact adding to that park. So that is the kind of outcome that I guess is the best case scenario, satisfying as much of the pulls in both directions as can be achieved. Of course, a complete demolition is still one of the options, and a further demolition option involved demolishing the village but building on the land down the bottom in Cormor Road where they'd previously had housing and taken it away. Seemingly slight bizarre notion myself, but it's just all part and parcel of the many ways in which people are trying to wrestle with this issue. So the local board has voted on this matter and sent a strong message to council saying that in a housing crisis it's not appropriate to be thinking about demolishing the village, and that there is valuable land behind the housing which is not suitable for particular park use. It's right up against backyards of the neighbours, but it would be very suitable for putting more social housing on. There is space for between 25 and 49 units, depending on which designs you look at, but it would not deflect in any way from the appreciation of the Pa homestead. It would not stop any lines of sight from the street or interrupt any activities that currently take place on the park. It wouldn't change the park, wouldn't decrease the size of the park. So it would provide a base for seniors in a community where senior housing is at risk, and we have the proof that there are more seniors deprived in our area and more seniors needing housing than indeed any other part of Auckland. So with all that in mind, I was joining in on that vote very strongly, and I thought it was worthwhile bringing it to the attention of the listeners just what is going on up there, because it is a regional art facility, and when people visit the homestead and they enjoy the park, I want them also to realise that there are people who live in the community next door who deserve support and should not be living with demolition as a possibility hanging over their heads. And on that note, I'm going to end today, and there's a little bit of music which you will hear a piece of, and I hope that you'll enjoy that. And then next time we'll be talking about some other matters, and I'll have people in the studio to expand the conversation. Thank you.